Everyone is voting for Jack, 'cause he's got what all the rest lack. Everyone wants to back Jack. Jack is on the right track, 'cause he's got...
Hey guys, welcome back to the Kennedy Dynasty Podcast. I'm glad you are back. If you are listening for the first time, I'm glad you have decided to listen. I think this is a really interesting one, and I'm excited for it. I've got a guest today, the one, the only, my wonderful husband Jeff is back.
What a pleasure.
It was hard to get him to pencil this in with me in the bonus room, but he did, and I'm glad to have him, because this one is... Chappaquiddick, boop, boop, boop.
It's going to be
Chappaquiddick.
Yeah.
Was that a joke?
Kinda, I don't know.
How's it funny?
It's not. It's a very serious topic.
Okay, I don't understand where he was going with that. And if you do, okay. Anyway. So, this is actually the anniversary week of Chappaquiddick. Jeffrey, did you know that?
I did not know that.
If you think about it, it would have been 69, so that's 30 plus 20. So this is the 51st anniversary of Chappaquiddick.
Wow.
This week on the 18th and 19th.
You should have done this podcast a year ago on the 50th anniversary.
Well, you know what? Hindsight. but I'm doing it this year. And I just got done researching pretty much all day, all the facts, all the details, and y'all... mind blown. I mean, I've always known the story, the very topical, like, overview of Chappaquiddick. Didn't really know too in-depth about it. I don't know why I've never read really into it, but I never have. And so this time I did. And wow. So I'm just going to get started. I've got lots of notes, like almost the notes where you can't even distinguish what you're supposed to be pointing out because they're all running together. So I'm going to try my best not to refer to said jumbled notes. I'm going to tell the story, and then if there is a date or something, I might have to stop and look, and it might be a little not too clean of a transition. But
looking across the room here, your sheets look like those note cards you would get before you did like a test, and they'd say fill it out with every piece of information you can fit on here, and you're like writing... super tiny.
Jeffrey knows that because I used to, in college, on the very rare occasion that they would make it open book is what he's talking about. I would get
I also
little,
went to school.
Yeah.
At some point in my life.
Yeah, but you didn't go to college. But anyway, you get like the little 4x6 note cards and they'd be like, you can fill it out. And I didn't would think like, oh, I don't need to study. And I would literally just write so incredibly tiny that I'd get into the test and not know exactly like where or what to even answer, and then I'd end up failing. It was great. Oh. But C's get degrees, guys. It all worked out.
It's true.
Okay, I'm going to get started. No one cares about any of this. So let's get on to the topic.
Topic.
I need some music or something.
I know, we need like
the transition.
A topic. Pew, pew, whir, whir.
I know, I'm trying to think if there's like, well, that's the second time we've gone, whir, 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 whir.
Yeah.
We need a buzzer.
We need one of those. I listen to a bunch of podcasts. They have like a little soundboard and they insert like sounds live.
I'm sure you could find something in our attic to do that.
Probably so.
Probably. All the gadgets. So, the date is July 18th, 1969. Okay? At this exact time in American history, the first men are about to land on the moon and walk.
We landed on the moon?
If you believe that. I'm just kidding. Yes, we did. So, JFK obviously said in 1961 that within the decade, we would land a man on the moon, correct?
Yes.
So, fast forward, 1969. It is within the decade, and the first men set out to land on the moon on the 16th of July. So, on the 18th of July, Ted Kennedy and his cousin... Joseph Gargan are competing in a Edgartown Yacht Club regatta. It was like a race where they raced the Ventura, which is the Kennedy yacht that we actually saw, or the sailboat that we saw at the library. It's on display at the library in the summers. So we actually got to see it. It's always in the Kennedy family. He was racing that exact yacht, and that made them decide, hey, we're going to throw a party, basically, in this cabin called the Lawrence Cottage. It was very secluded, and they were trying to throw a party to celebrate or make a reunion of the Boiler Room Girls, which were a group of girls that helped in Robert Kennedy's campaign the year before for president. So which this is the first time it was like a big deal that they were getting to go back and even compete in this because they had missed it the year before because of the assassination stuff. So they were just amped up, ready to go. So the ones that they invited to the party were six of the Boiler Room girls made it, and then there was a group of men that they had raced with, basically. And the race was to take place the Friday and the Saturday, which was July 18th and 19th. Okay, so they get off the boat from the race on the 18th. He lost. I think he came in like 9th or something. And they meet at the cabin at around 8:30. They start to party hard. Lots of drinks, lots of fun, all the things. And one of the people in attendance, one of the Boiler Room girls, was Mary Jo Kopechne, which I had to look up the pronunciation of that. I actually wrote down like how they write pronunciation so I didn't mess it up. So she was there. And they decided, apparently, okay, so this is what Ted Kennedy said. After hours of partying, he said that she came up to him and asked for a ride back to the ferry to go back to her hotel. Okay?
Okay.
So, there's no... Ted Kennedy was not wearing a watch this whole night. I need you to remember that. Oh. That is very important. Okay. Okay?
Mental note.
So, they told no one that they were leaving the cottage. They just kind of slipped out. But we know for a fact that it was around 11:15 because he asked his driver what time it was. And his driver's name was... I can't remember the first name, but it was Crimmins was his last name. So, and Ted asked for the keys as well. Mm-hmm. So he didn't normally drive himself. So that was unusual. Mary Jo left her purse and her hotel key at the cottage, which you just don't do if you're going back to your hotel.
Yeah.
So that's weird. They get in the car. There's various accounts of what happened. Ted Kennedy says that what happened was he was on his way back to the ferry, took a wrong turn, then hit his brakes too hard, slammed off the dock, boom, car in the water, upside down. That's how it was found. But the sheriff, deputy sheriff, Huck Look was his name. It was like Christopher Huck Look, but he went by Huck. He claims to have seen them around, okay, this is one of the times I'm going to have to reference my notes. He claims to have seen them after midnight at 12:40 a.m. Because he saw two people driving, same car, and the guy looked really lost, like zoomed past him at one point, backed up, turned around, pulled out, and like tried to get away from him when he was asking them if they needed help. Uh-huh. So that would leave, if his testimony is like right, that would leave an hour of time that Ted Kennedy acts like never existed.
It's a lot of time.
It's a lot of time. So, nevertheless, car crashes. Ted Kennedy says... I mean, he's the only one that was there, supposedly, but I'll hit on that later.
No.
He is the, he says that he dove in seven or eight times and tried to get her out. He was able to get out pretty easily. Called her name over and over, couldn't get her. So then he goes to the bank and lays there for like 15 minutes. And I mean the bank of water, not like a bank. Probably somebody will get that wrong. Yeah. So goes and lays there for like 15 minutes in shock is what he says. And then he decides to get up in his wet clothes and starts to walk back to the cottage. Okay.
Okay.
So he gets up in his wet clothes and decides to walk back to the cottage. Okay. He claims that he never saw a single light, never saw anything in the walk back. Okay. No houses, no nothing. Well, someone later gave testimony, the homeowner of, which was actually called the Dyke House, which the bridge he ran off of was called the Dyke Bridge off Dyke Road.
Mm-hmm.
So lots of that. The homeowner's name was Sylvia Malm, and she lived there, and she had a phone and said that she had left the lights on when she went to bed. There was no doubt that he would have seen her house
mm-hmm.
passing it. So that's a little interesting tidbit. So Teddy gets back. He jumps in the back of a rented car that they have out front of the house, calls for Gargan and Gargan's friend, Paul Markham, to come with him, tells them about the accident. They go back to where it was. Gargan and Markham jump in, try to get, I don't know if it's Markham or Markham. I'm going to say Markham. That's easier to say.
Markham.
Yeah. Yeah. So... they jump back in, try to get her. Obviously, doesn't work. They get out. They all go back to this payphone that is by the ferry, and they basically argue for a while about if they should call the police or not. So they both thought that, yeah, you should definitely call the police. Ted was kind of not wanting to because he obviously didn't know how to handle it, whatever. He then jumps in the water, swims 500 feet to go back to his hotel, and undresses, collapses on the bed. At 2:30, he gets back up and goes downstairs at the hotel or wherever, finds somebody and asks them what time it is. Remember, he wasn't wearing a watch. Mm-hmm. So, finds out it's 2:30. I guess he goes back to bed, because I don't have notes about that. I assume he goes back to his room. Then Gargan and Markham went back and told everybody that Ted had swam back to his hotel and that Mary Jo probably went to the hotel to go to sleep. That was the story they told everybody. So then, the next account we have is at 7:30 a.m. Ted was casual and collected when he asked, or when he talked to the winner of the previous day's race. I guess they'd bumped into each other, literally acted like nothing in the world had happened whatsoever. So that was kind of weird. Mm. And then at 8 o'clock, the three men met back up, Gargan, Markham, and Ted. About that time, people are fishing and they see the car. Okay. So they call the police at about 8:20. At 8:45, John Farrer, who was the captain of fire and rescue, dove down and found Mary Jo's body and pulled it out. The medical examiner that was working that day was actually an assistant, and because the other one was out of town or whatever, looked at her and immediately said, well, it's obviously drowning. Farrer never agreed with that. He always thought that it was obvious suffocation because the way her body was positioned, she was also in the back seat. Let's remember that too. Mm-hmm. The way her body positioned, it looked like she had her neck up. There was obviously an air bubble or something, that he had pulled her out of or something. I can't remember exactly what it said about that, but also her body was completely contorted to almost be in that looking to get air. And also they found a wet spot on the seal, on the top of the trunk, like on the back. Gotcha. Or not a wet spot, a dry spot. So it showed that it was not completely submerged, so that could have been air.
Like the, she had been inside the car for a period of time in an air bubble, just breathing that air, and then the oxygen
yeah.
was gone.
Yeah, so what happened was suffocation. Mm-hmm. Wow. So that's the most, I think that's definitely the most probable cause of death. But there was never an autopsy. They literally sent the body back immediately, signing the death certificate that it was accidental drowning. And she also had a 0.09% blood alcohol level, which for her, she was 5'2", really tiny. That meant that she had had like 4 to 5 drinks within the hour before she died too. Mm-hmm. So she was super drunk, which we can allude to that Ted was obviously pretty drunk too.
Yeah.
So all that happens. Ted, in the meantime, goes back to the payphone that he was at the night before, or the morning, same morning, I guess, and debated everything, starts making calls, not to the police, but to lawyers and friends to try to figure out what to do. Mm. Still has not told the authorities. Someone tells him that the police have found out and that it's been found, and then he goes back to the police station around 9:45-ish, admits that he was the driver, and basically that was it. Goes back to Hyannisport. Okay? So, and he says that he was in shock, too. That's why he left. Mm-hmm. Because he couldn't find her. He didn't know what to do. He was in shock. And that's why he also had not gone to the police, because he was in shock all night. That's what he says. So he gets back to the compound. There are some really notable names for Kennedy lovers waiting at the compound for him to help him get out of this mess if possible. And those names were, there's a lot, but Stephen Smith was there, which was Gene Kennedy Smith's husband. So Ted's brother-in-law, he was considered the master fixer of the Kennedy problems. He could always find a way to get them out of things. So he was there. Robert McNamara was there, Ted Sorensen, Lynn Billings, who was JFK's best friend, et cetera. There was just a lot of those kinds of notable figures yeah. within the family there. Smith said that he could not run in 1972 presidential election, which was what he was, going to do. That was what Ted was mm-hmm. had next to do. He said he couldn't run. There's no way. And the only thing that they had to focus on was trying to get Ted off without manslaughter. So that everything was basically gone for Teddy, except for just trying to keep him out of prison for killing yeah. someone. So then we get to the funeral. The funeral was on July 22nd in Plymouth, Pennsylvania. Ted shows up with a really stupid-looking neck brace for publicity reasons, and Joan came with him. Joan was currently on bed rest because she had had 2 miscarriages and she was pregnant. She came out of bed rest to go to the funeral with Ted to stand by his side for publicity reasons. Again, she ended up later losing the baby really soon after the Chappaquiddick incident, and she blames the incident on losing it, like the stress of yeah. this. So, which I could say, yes, that's highly yeah. probable. I'm sure that was horrible on her, all of the things that were coming out about Teddy. So they go to the funeral. He has his first hearing in Massachusetts on July 25th. Basically, his lawyers somehow painted him to have this, like, seamless driving record, like this perfect record on all accounts, when in reality he actually had a horrible driving record with lots of reckless driving, and I think he even had a DUI, don't quote me on that, but lots of issues. So, somehow the judge believed his lawyer that he was perfect and didn't have any issues.
Believed him, air quotes.
The lawyer? Or you mean the judge? Yeah. I mean, who knows? Probably bought him off. So he denied everything except for, obviously, that he was the driver and left the scene. So he was found guilty of negligence. He got a suspended license for like 6 months. And he ended up getting a 2-month jail sentence, which was suspended. And he got a year of parole, which was also suspended.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. So he got off unscathed. They made in the case, they made the argument that punishment was going to be enough for him publicly, like in the news and everything, that he shouldn't actually have real punishment. So whatever. He did pay the Kopechnys $90,904 of personal money, and insurance paid them $50,000. But they never went forward and pressed any charges against him because they didn't want people to think that they wanted blood money. So that's all that they ever got out of it, never went further with it. There was a grand jury investigation in 1970 that led to nothing. It was just some interviews and case closed. It was literally nothing. He was, though, he did, on July 25th, which was the same day as his first hearing, he did an address to the nation, where he basically told exactly what happened in his own words, and it was like a 12-minute thing, and he even says in it something about how he doesn't know if it's the Kennedy curse coming on, which I can't believe he even acknowledged that. I mean, basically tries to just look really sorry slash innocent. And says, basically asks the public if he should resign or not from being a senator. They say no, overwhelming. He didn't really get a lot of good publicity from that necessarily. He really got some backlash over being just stupid and not honest and stuff, but people still wanted him to be senator, and he was reelected in 1970 as the Massachusetts senator with 60% of the votes, which was down from 74% previous election, but still, I mean, he still got in, which is crazy to me. He didn't run in 72 for president, obviously, or in, I guess it would have been 76? Was there a 76?
I don't know.
Yeah, it would have to be. It's every 4 years. So he decided that he was going to run for, I guess it would have been the 1980 election, which he started campaigning in 1979. What really was his downfall, though, which I'm going to insert this right here.
Kennedy can be dominating, imposing, and masterful. But off the stump, in personal interviews, he can become stilted, elliptical, and at times appear as if he really doesn't want America to get to know him.
Why do you want to be president?
Well, were I to make the announcement and to run, the reasons that I would run is because I have a great belief in this country that it is, there's more natural resources than any nation of the world, there's the greatest educated population in the world, the greatest technology of any country in the world, the greatest capacity for innovation in the world, and the greatest political system in the world. And yet I see at the current time, that most of the industrial nations of the world are exceeding us in terms of productivity, are doing better than us in terms of meeting the problems of inflation, that they're dealing with their problems of energy and their problems of unemployment. And it just seems to me that this nation can cope and deal with its problems in a way that it has in the past. We're facing complex issues and problems in this nation at this time, but we have faced similar challenges at other times. And the energies and the resourcefulness of this nation, I think, should be focused on these problems in a way that brings a sense of restoration in this country by its people to in dealing with the problems that we face, primarily the issues on the economy, the problems of inflation, and the problems of energy. And I would basically feel that that it's imperative for this country to either move forward, that it can't stand still, or otherwise it moves backward.
So really, from as you can see by what you just heard, his downfall was from this interview for CBS on November 4th, 1979, where he was asked, why do you want to be president? And you just heard him fumble over his words like a crazy person. I mean, wow. It's so bad. It's like he lost everything. But he was really broken down in the interview first by the guy that was interviewing him, because he started asking him about Chappaquiddick and really like kind of almost accused him of being a liar before asking why he wanted to be president. So he was in a bad headspace at that question. But literally the answer to that question is why he lost. I mean, everybody was just done with him at that point. So he didn't even get the nomination. And he lost to Carter, who then lost to Reagan. So he was a Massachusetts state senator until his death in 2009, though. So he kept it up for years and years. And yeah, that's the whole story. But I have a lot to go back into.
Oh, okay.
So I'm sorry. That was a lot. What do you think from it at first? Like, what's your first initial thought about Chappaquiddick now that you know just the facts on the table?
Oh, I don't know. There just seems to be a lot of... I just don't understand how you... couldn't, like, the one guy went down there and found her. Right. How could you not go get her? Like, especially if you got out, how could you not
call the freaking police?
That too.
Like, that would look so much better. There was a phone right there. Like, and the dude walked back to the cottage. Like, it's crazy. Did I mention the purse?
The purse. I might have. That they left the purse at the cabin?
Yeah, but no, there's more. Okay. Oh. So I'm going to get into this little section too.
Okay.
So I'll just get into it all together. I meant to talk about the purse during the initial story, but I didn't. So Mary Jo was actually not identified properly at first because there was the purse of another one of the boiler room girls in the passenger side of the car. And her name was Rosemary Keough. So they identified her as Rosemary, who obviously she was not.
Mm-hmm.
And the thought comes to mind, immediately my thought about it was, okay, why would Rosemary's purse have been there and not Mary Jo's? And I thought, okay, Mary Jo's drunk. Maybe she grabbed Keough's on accident.
Yeah.
Which would still be weird, though, because you don't just grab somebody else's purse. Like, you know your purse, you know? So I kind of got really confused about this when I was initially reading it. And then I was like, I need to do some more research into what's up with this Rosemary girl. So I did. This is where I'm going to have to go to notes a little bit. So Rosemary says that she was riding the car earlier in the day and left her purse in there, which a close by neighbor said that's definitely not true because he or she kind of watched on the party because it was right next door and it was crazy. Basically the whole day and night, and said the girl never got in the car. No one was in the car until Mary Jo and Teddy. So, and then after the purse was discovered, Rosemary called the police station, said, I want to get my purse. And they said, okay, come get it. She sends someone else and then rushes off to where'd she go? I can't remember. Oh, Martha's Vineyard, immediately. So just rushes off really quickly. I had to look at my notes. That's why I paused there. So with this, I found it odd and I started looking into some theories as to why everything was kind of so jumbled and weird there. There was one theory that said that they think Rosemary got in the car with Teddy, and as drunk as Mary Jo was, they think she was in the back asleep because she was found in the back of the car. They think that they may have gone swimming or whatever, and the car flips, Rosemary gets out, Ted gets out, and never knew that Mary Jo was in the back to begin with.
Interesting theory.
I think that's interesting because Mary Jo had no lacerations, no cuts, no nothing from the glass impact that would have been all over her if she had been in the right passenger side of the car. So, and Rosemary never showed her face and ran off real quick. She sent somebody else to get her purse. So literally, if you think about it, if you have the impact of the glass coming in and you're in the front, she would have been cut all up. I mean, everything, which we know, we've been in a car accident.
Yeah.
Like, you don't get out of the front seat not just looking normal. So she was not. It was almost looked as though she was already in the back seat to begin with, which is just weird.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. On top of that, Rosemary also said a year after, on the 1 year anniversary of Mary Jo's death, they went to the grave, and she is quoted to say exactly this: "My friend Mary Jo just happened to be in the wrong car at the wrong time with the wrong people."
Ooh, people.
And she said the exact same thing, using the plural people, 5 years later to the Boston Globe Spotlight team.
Wow.
Weird, right?
Very.
Like, why would Mary Jo not have had any cuts? That blew my mind when I read that.
Yeah,
and then
that
this
makes
girl
sense.
Doesn't even show her freaking face. She just runs off.
She's passed out drunk in the back. The mm-hmm. car goes underwater. All of a sudden, she wakes up underwater, can't breathe, comes up, and she's just frantically freaking out in an air bubble. Oxygen's gone. She's
true, but then it's like
they don't know she's under there, so they're not diving in to help her.
That's the thing, too. Everyone's like, well, that's maybe why Ted never said anything in those hours. And then after it came out, they took Rosemary out of it. Do you see what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
he didn't rush to the police in all that time. He obviously was just, like, in shock. So some people say that's because he and Rosemary got out and maybe tried to cover that stuff up in and of itself, because that wouldn't look good on him anyway, being a married senator, to be in the car at a car crash with a girl.
Yeah.
So it's a thought.
Ooh.
Right? Right?
Yep.
So I tend to believe that a little bit. Like, I don't normally latch on to conspiracy theories so hard, but
that's a good one.
It's a good one. I mean, her purse was there. I don't know. Weird, 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 weird. So that's really the story of Chappaquiddick. I want to talk to you a little more about whatever you think that really stands out in it. And, like, do you think that his reputation, even though obviously, he continued to be a senator and stuff. Do you think that that would have permanently damaged his reputation and taken away his chances of being president if he hadn't have messed up that interview so bad? Like, what do you think?
I don't know. Like, it was definitely looks really bad no matter what story came out about it as far as her dying in the car. I think it definitely would have put a stain on his chances.
I think so. But at the same time, if he was eloquent and kind of got himself together and really amped it up and made himself look
Kennedy.
Really good, I think he probably could have gotten out of it. I really do. I think that he could have.
Those Kennedys seem to get out of a lot.
Tell me about it. But I really think that if he would have handled that interview better and all the one, I don't know. I just could see it. I mean, how would he be reelected as senator so easily over and over and over?
Yeah, that's true. He was senator till he died. Like,
exactly,
right?
2009.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Another thing, I'll go back to the moon landing too. So they land on the moon on July 20th, 1969. Well, obviously all of this is going on in the news because it happened, like I said, it was on technically the 19th, because it wouldn't have been after midnight. So the guys are in space. They have no idea that anything's happened. They come down to Earth, and all of a sudden, media is going crazy over what happened to Ted Kennedy. So I've even heard that some of the moon landing stuff right after the initial like landing kind of got overshadowed because Ted Kennedy was in the news. It's just crazy that two of the Kennedys at the exact same time were in the news for very different things. Which was President Kennedy's call for men to go to the moon, and then Ted being an idiot. So,
what a tale.
It's a tale. It sure is. I had learned a lot. I obviously knew, very surface, car crash, Mary Jo's dead, he doesn't go to the police, gets out of it. That's kind of all I knew, but there's so much more detail behind it.
I want to see the movie with the conspiracy theory. That's the one I want to see. Like, we watched
movie?
That one.
I don't think there's a movie with it.
I'm saying that I want to see one.
Yeah.
Like, we watched the latest movie with Jason Clarke.
Yeah.
We saw that one. I want to see that, but I want to see the story folded in of
Yeah, I did hear that there was a documentary somewhere. We'll have to hunt it down that highlights on that and Rosemary. And that one that you pulled up the other day, Jeffrey had pulled up like a YouTube video for me to watch. It was so boring and I turned it off. It was made in like 94 or something and Rosemary was in it. I remember her name popping up and I didn't at the time know that that would be an interesting name to pop up, but it did. So I want to go back and see what that was too, now that I know this kind of stuff. But I think Rosemary was in on it.
That's something
wrong. I mean, sis went back quick to the vineyard.
Yeah.
Got away quick. Didn't show her face. You'd think you'd go to, why would you not go get your own purse? Why would you send someone to get it for you? Why would she not have a cut on her body and be in the back of the car? Unless she just crawled back there. But still, you would be cut up.
Oh, yeah.
There's no doubt. I don't know. Then again, Ted wasn't really cut up. You know, he wasn't really cut all pieces, but the report that I read of the way that the glass was and window and everything and the way her head were knocked and everything, especially being unbuckled, would have obviously made an impact on her. I don't know. Oh, I'm sitting here just thinking out loud. People are probably getting bored now. Anyway, that's Chappaquiddick. I, my friends, am going to go live on Saturday, which is the anniversary of Chappaquiddick. July 18th, and I would love for you to join me and talk about this, because I want to know you guys' conspiracy theories, all the things that you have to think, and I'm going to even pop up some pictures of different, like, locations of where the house is versus the bridge versus the cottage and all kinds of stuff, and us just have a really deep conversation about it. I loved going live this week. It was so much fun to get to talk to everybody, all these people that I've kind of messaged back and forth but have without me being able to see them, which I wish it was a two-way thing where I could see your face, but it was kind of cool to have like almost an open conversation with people that I've seen engage on my profile. So Instagram Live, July 18th, I will post about it, of course. It's going to be all Chappaquiddick-based. I think that's all I have. That's not all I have. I have one more thing. Please, 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 please rate and review. I almost said subscribe, but you're probably already subscribed. If you're not subscribed, make sure you're subscribed. Rate and review my podcast. Please, everybody. This helps me so, so much. Well, only review it and rate it if you like it.
Yeah.
Like 5-star, great review, please. Because it really helps me. It actually helps me chart, and I want to chart better. I'm charting in other countries besides America, which is pretty cool.
Was it like Ireland or something?
Yeah, I think it was Ireland. Yeah, which is super awesome. Thank you, everyone in Ireland listening. But I would love, love, love for you guys to do that for me. It would help me more than you even know to possibly get charting. And that'd just be exciting to get some more reviews and comments and everything. I love to read those. If you're not following my Instagram at Kennedy, KennedyDynasty, at Kennedy Dynasty. Lots of cool pictures, and I'm trying to engage you guys more. We have discussions and answer questions and all kinds of things. So go follow me there. One more plug. So sorry. I have a shop, shirt shop.
Yes.
Well, shirt and like, there's other little like coffee mugs and stuff. Go check it out. It's, I think, shop.kennedydynasty. No, what is it?
You can just go to kennedydynasty.com.
Yeah, it's on Spreadshirt. It's kennedydynasty.spreadshirt.com, something like that. I don't know. Go to kennedydynasty.com. It's there. The link is there. And it's also in my bio on Instagram. Y'all, cool stuff. Go get some stuff for this quarantine. Some good cozy sweatshirts, all the things. And, that would really help me too. And I think that's all I've got. Thank you, Jeff, for joining me.
It was a treat.
I'm sorry that I barely let you talk. Huh?
I learned so much.
I thought you said I love you so much. I was like, I love you too. I
also love you so much.
Love you too. I'm sorry I barely let you get a word in, but I appreciate you joining me.
That's okay. That was great.
Also, after this, I'm going to insert Ted Kennedy's speech that he gave on July 25th, the address to the nation. So you guys can listen to that too if you want to. If not, then don't. I will talk to you guys next time.
My fellow citizens, I have requested this opportunity to talk to the people of Massachusetts about the tragedy which happened last Friday evening. This morning, I entered a plea of guilty to the charge of leaving the scene of an accident. Prior to my appearance in court, it would have been proper for me to comment on these matters. But tonight I am free to tell you what happened and to say what it means to me. On the weekend of July 18th, I was on Martha's Vineyard Island, participating with my nephew, Joe Kennedy, as for 30 years my family has participated, in the annual Edgartown Sailing Regatta. Only reasons of health prevented my wife from accompanying me. On Chappaquiddick Island, off Martha's Vineyard, I attended on Friday evening, July 18th, a cookout I had encouraged and helped sponsor for a devoted group of Kennedy campaign secretaries. When I left the party around 11:15 p.m., I was accompanied by one of these girls, Miss Mary Jo Kopechne. Mary Jo was one of the most devoted members of the staff of Senator Robert Kennedy. She worked for him for 4 years and was broken up over his death. For this reason, and because she was such a gentle, kind, an idealistic person, all of us tried to help her feel that she still had a home with the Kennedy family. There is no truth whatever, to the widely circulated suspicions of immoral conduct that have been leveled at my behavior and hers regarding that evening. There has never been a private relationship between us of any kind. I know of nothing in Mary Jo's conduct on that or any other occasion. And the same is true of the other girls at that party that would lend any substance to such ugly speculation about their character. Nor was I driving under the influence of liquor. Little over 1 mile away, the car that I was driving on an unlit road went off a narrow bridge, which had no guardrails and was built on a left angle to the road. The car overturned in a deep pond and immediately filled with water. I remember thinking as the cold water rushed in around my head that I was for certain drowning. Then water entered my lungs and I actually felt the sensation of drowning. But somehow I struggled to the surface alive. I made immediate and repeated efforts to save Mary Jo by diving into the strong and murky current, but succeeded only in increasing my state of utter exhaustion and alarm. My conduct and conversations during the next several hours, to the extent that I can remember them, make no sense to me at all. Although my doctors informed me that I suffered a cerebral concussion as well as shock, I do not seek to escape responsibility for my actions by placing the blame either on the physical and emotional trauma brought on by the accident or on anyone else. I regard as indefensible the fact that I did not report the accident to the police immediately. Instead of looking directly for a telephone after lying exhausted in the grass for an undetermined time, I walked back to the cottage where the party was being held and requested the help of two friends, my cousin Joseph Gargan and Paul Markham, and directed them to return immediately to the scene with me. This was sometime after midnight. In order to undertake a new effort to dive down and locate Miss Kopechne, their strenuous efforts, undertaken at some risk to their own lives, also proved futile. All kinds of scrambled thoughts, all of them confused, some of them irrational, many of them which I cannot recall, and some of which I would not have seriously entertained under normal circumstances, went through my mind during this period. They were reflected in the various inexplicable, inconsistent, and inconclusive things I said and did, including such questions as whether the girl might still be alive somewhere out of that immediate area, whether some awful curse did actually hang over all the Kennedys, whether there was some justifiable reason for me to doubt what had happened and to delay my report, whether somehow the awful weight of this incredible incident might in some way pass from my shoulders. I was overcome, I'm frank to say, by a jumble of emotions, grief, fear, doubt, exhaustion, panic, confusion, and shock. instructing Gargan and Markham not to alarm Mary Jo's friends that night, I had them take me to the ferry crossing. The ferry having shut down for the night, I suddenly jumped into the water and impulsively swam across, nearly drowning once again in the effort, and returned to my hotel about 2 a.m. and collapsed in my room. I remember going out at one point and saying something to the room clerk. In the morning, with my mind somewhat more lucid, I made an effort to call a family legal advisor, Burke Marshall, from a public telephone on the Chappaquiddick side of the ferry, and then belatedly reported the accident to the Martha Vineyard police. Today, as I mentioned, I felt morally obligated to plead guilty to the charge of leaving the scene of an accident. No words on my part can possibly express the terrible pain and suffering I feel over this tragic incident. This last week has been an agonizing one for me and for the members of my family. And the grief we feel over the loss of a wonderful friend will remain with us the rest of our lives. These events, the publicity, innuendo, and whispers which have surrounded them, and my admission of guilt this morning, raises the question in my mind of whether my standing among the people of my state has been so impaired that I should resign my seat in the United States Senate. If at any time the citizens of Massachusetts should lack confidence in their senator's character or his ability, with or without justification, he could not, in my opinion, adequately perform his duties and should not continue in office. The people of this state, the state which sent John Quincy Adams, and Daniel Webster, and Charles Sumner, and Henry Cabot Lodge, and John Kennedy to the United States Senate, are entitled to representation in that body by men who inspire their utmost confidence. For this reason, I would understand full well why some might think it right for me to resign. For me, this will be a difficult decision to make. It has been 7 years since my first election to the Senate. You and I share many memories. Some of them have been glorious. Some have been very sad. The opportunity to work with you and serve Massachusetts has made my life worthwhile. And so I ask you tonight, the people of Massachusetts, to think this through with me. In facing this decision, I seek your advice and opinion. In making it, I seek your prayers. For this is a decision that I will have finally to make on my own. It has been written, a man does what he must, in spite of personal consequences, in spite of obstacles and dangers and pressures. And that is the basis of all human morality. Whatever may be the sacrifices he faces, if he follows his conscience, the loss of his friends, his fortune, his contentment, even the esteem of his fellow men, Each man must decide for himself the course he will follow. The stories of the past courage cannot supply courage itself. For this, each man must look into his own soul. I pray that I can have the courage to make the right decision. Whatever is decided, whatever the future holds for me, I hope that I shall be able to put this most recent tragedy behind me and make some further contribution to our state, mankind, whether it be in public or private life. Thank you and good night.
Come on and vote for Kennedy, vote for Kennedy, keep America strong. Kennedy, he just keeps rolling up.
Welcome to Anthology of Heroes, the podcast that explores the most pivotal moments of history through the eyes of those who lived it. In this podcast, we don't spend our time recounting facts and dates. Instead, we follow in the footsteps of national heroes, kings, or ordinary people who lived and breathed the moments that shaped our world. We're not hemmed in by eras, borders, or religions. Instead, we seek out the tales of those who defied the odds and fought passionately for their beliefs. Whether they're right or wrong is up to you to decide. From Vercingetorix's doomed rebellion against Rome, to Osceola's unshakable war against the USA, all the way up to the inspiring Sobibor concentration camp uprising in World War II, each episode is an immersive listening experience, blending music and sound effects to really draw you into the story. Our episodes go for about 45 minutes, making them perfect for your commute, and are crafted using a wealth of historical sources, which I list on our website if you want to learn more. I'm the host, Elliot Gates, and I'm thrilled to have you joining me as we uncover history's hidden gems and illuminate the faded pages of our past. Look out for the Anthology of Heroes podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, or anywhere else you get your podcasts from.